to Misunderstood, a podcast dedicated to better understanding MS and learning to live well with MS. I'm your host, Katie Sloan. Our usual reminders as we begin. I am not an expert. I'm just a person like you living with MS and trying to make the best of it. Misunderstood is based on my personal experience, what I've learned from my doctors, other care providers, and my own solutions-oriented research and pattern-finding obsession. While the majority of the information I share has been vetted by doctors, I am not a doctor. My intention is that you use the information shared here as a springboard for discussion between you and your doctor regarding your future care options. And lastly, MS impacts each of us uniquely. I hope to shine a light on a wide range of approaches and strategies for living better with MS. What you choose to do with that information is always your choice, and what works for one may not work for all. My very favorite episodes feature people in our shared MS community who are doing amazing things to make the world a better place, despite the many challenges we face. A few months ago, I had the pleasure of first meeting today's guest, Carmen Lucia, a wonderful member of our MS community and an expert on food allergies, who just recently released an impressive book on the topic called Allergy: Menus, Recipes, and Techniques. Carmen has a culinary arts degree and is classically trained in French cuisine. She's worked at Michelin star restaurants in Manhattan, has had her own baking confections company, and has worked as a chef for catering companies. As a kitchen auditor and allergy director, she was in charge of developing their menus, recipes, and techniques, overseeing 30,000 meals being prepared, packed, and delivered to schools all over New York. Carmen hopes her book will revolutionize public school and other public food services to better provide healthy and delicious foods for all humans they serve, regardless of their unique dietary needs. While Carmen's book is primarily for corporations that prepare meals on a large scale, she also breaks down her recipes to 10 servings, so her book will be a tremendous asset for all sorts of organizations and facilities who serve meals to groups with diverse dietary needs. As an MS Pro side tip, since I do a lot of batch cooking at home with my partner so we don't need to cook when we're not feeling up to it, I recently purchased Carmen's book to use at home. The pictures look delicious, and I can't wait to give her recipes a try. Plus, it's a nice way I can support Carmen and the important work she's doing to help bring awareness and solutions to the food industry. It will also be helpful when we entertain friends and family who have dietary restrictions. Before we meet Carmen and learn her MS story and more about her book and her pathway to becoming a published author, I'd like to briefly share a bit about food allergies and sensitivities, since those often go hand in hand with MS and autoimmunity. And it won't take you long to realize, if you don't already, just how important it is for us to be very aware of our reaction to common food allergens, as well as our unique food sensitivities. There are 8 major food allergens currently recognized by the FDA in the United States: milk, eggs, fish, crustacean shellfish, tree nuts like pistachios and hazelnuts, peanuts, wheat, and soybeans. Beyond these top 8, other common food allergens are mustard, sesame, celery, and poppy seeds. Food allergies and other types of food sensitivities affect millions of people in the United States alone. This is becoming more and more important every year as allergies are on the rise. There are 3 reasons most experts believe this is happening. 1, the hygiene hypothesis. And this is a theory that suggests that lowered exposure in early childhood might induce a hyperactive immune system, eventually causing allergies. 2, environmental changes. Pollution, climate change, and increased exposures to a wide variety of allergens and toxins that contribute to allergy development. Or 3, simply an increase in awareness of and an increase in reporting of symptoms. Allergic reactions to food vary greatly in severity, from mild, like lip swelling or hives, to severe and even life-threatening. These reactions occur when our body's immune system reacts to various proteins in food. So it's no surprise that folks with autoimmune conditions like MS are more likely to experience a higher rate of food allergies and sensitivities. Much about the MS and food allergy connection is still being heavily researched and tested, but there are by now strong indications that those of us living with MS who also experience food allergies may experience more frequent relapses and greater symptoms. Since food allergies trigger an immune response, including formation of antibodies to food, and impact our overall gut microbiome health, this contributes to our overall inflammation, which can worsen our outcomes, especially over time. You might ask, so how do we know if we have a food allergy or sensitivity? Keeping a food diary is a very good idea, and in fact, an overall MS symptoms diary is also quite wise. By tracking our symptoms alongside what we're eating, we can more easily determine patterns as they emerge. The most common allergies that people with MS experience are those to gluten, dairy, nightshades like tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, or peppers, and processed foods, which contain all sorts of hidden allergens, additives, and preservatives. Symptoms often manifest as digestive issues like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, bloating, and abdominal pain, skin reactions like eczema, itching, hives, or swelling, respiratory reactions like wheezing, coughing, or difficulty breathing, oral allergy syndrome, which is tingling or itching of the mouth, lips, and throat, or anaphylaxis, which is difficulty breathing, swelling of the throat, rapid heartbeat, and even loss of consciousness. It's really important to consult a medical professional if we experience any of these reactions, as they can get more serious over time with more exposure to the allergen. We might also experience allergy-related headaches, joint pain, fatigue, depression, anxiety, insomnia, obesity, or food craving. Once we suspect we may have a food allergy or sensitivity, how can we manage food allergies as people living with MS? Research advises that we consult with a nutritionist or a functional or integrative medicine doctor who can help us accurately diagnose our food allergies and sensitivities and determine how best to manage them. Another tool we can use that is highly effective is the elimination diet. This is important to do under the guidance of a health professional, since the sudden elimination of a lot of foods can have an extreme impact on our various body systems, and quick changes to our blood sugar, for instance, can have life-threatening ramifications. My related gratitude for this episode is for Dr. Peyrovi, who helped me identify and then eliminate my unique inflammatory food triggers after basic allergy testing came back negative. By the way, it's my understanding this is often the case for us, since traditional allergy testing only looks at reactions of our skin and blood, not the entirety of our body systems that interact with the food we ingest, especially if we have leaky gut and food particles have made it into our bloodstream and tissues. By going through an elimination diet with my doctor, I was able to determine my unique triggers, and I quickly realized that for me, avoiding prepackaged and prepared foods was really important, since I mildly react to a lot of oils, fillers, binders, and natural flavors, which, although derived from natural sources, are often extracted by a process that can involve chemicals that we can be reactive to. I also learned that I need to limit the amount of red tomatoes and red and green bell peppers that I eat, although I can eat yellow and orange tomatoes and bell peppers without incident. This is probably more nuanced than most people, but it was really helpful to learn. And I learned that I'm not reactive to gluten as I previously thought, as long as I eat high-quality gluten products free of pesticides and toxins. Milk was another weird one for me. I need to avoid buttermilk and regular milk, but I am not reactive to organic non-GMO half and half. So if I need milk for a particular recipe, I'll use watered down half and half. I can eat cheese without incident as long as it's organic and non-GMO. So I stick to specialty high quality cheeses with clean ingredients. I also do really well with goat cheese. By learning these unique dietary intricacies, I can maintain a full range of nutrients in my diet rather than eliminating huge categories altogether, which often isn't necessary or beneficial since our bodies rely on a wide range of nutrients to operate optimally. And when I previously cut out large groups of foods, it caused a lot of fatigue, which I likely don't need to tell you is a very common and debilitating symptom we can experience. I will forever be grateful to Dr. Peyrovi for helping me identify my unique dietary needs. That was a real turning point for me in terms of my MS progression. I started feeling better in just a few weeks. I have had no new symptoms since, and a lot of the digestive symptoms I was experiencing are no longer an issue. Wait, before we go on, did I actually say I started feeling significantly better in just a few weeks? Yes, I did. This experience is what taught me to believe that food is medicine. And yes, it can drastically change our bodies very quickly. In fact, it takes in general just 24 to 36 hours for food to pass through the entire digestive system, with some exceptions taking only about 12 hours and others as long as 72 hours. So if we change what we eat, how we are fueling our bodies, we can feel significantly better in mere days. To learn more about nutrition for MS, check out our other episodes featuring Dr. Peyrovi. Anyways, this switch for me was years ago now, and over time, as my gut has healed, I've been able to reintroduce just about everything I wanted to. For instance, I no longer have any reactions to any color of tomato or bell pepper. I still don't use milk or buttermilk, but that's simply because I've found other alternatives that I like better. If you're interested in learning about MS and leaky gut, the elimination diet, and gut restoration process, you can take online classes from Dr. Peyrovi at a very low cost. Or if you live in California, you can access her as a patient through her Stanford practice. To express your interest for virtual learning, sign up on her webpage, as it's my understanding that she offers these courses only when there is an interested cohort. You can do so at truemedicinems.com. Okay, enough learning about allergies and food sensitivities. Now that you know why it matters so much for us, without further ado, let's meet Carmen Lucia to learn about her lived experiences with MS and her new book, Allergy: Menus, Recipes, and Techniques.
Okay, so today I have with me Carmen. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, and I can't be more excited to have you here and to learn more about you and your MS story, and then really to talk about your new book, all about allergies. So we have so much to discuss today, and I think let's just dive right in. And so people can get to know you a little bit, tell us a little bit about your pathway to MS and your diagnosis story, if you would.
My first symptom, I was in third grade. So I was 8 years old, and I would just, I remember I would just fall. My legs would just give out, and it would scrape my knees really bad. It happened, I did that, it would happen to me every day. Every day going to school or coming back from going home, I would always fall, and it lasted for 2 weeks. And no one knew what it was, so because it was relapsing remitting, you know, of course. But my other symptom, my next symptom, didn't happen until years later, where I experienced vertigo. And they thought it was me being overweight and having high blood sugar, which they didn't even look for that. And that was in junior high school. And that was my vertigo. And then in high school, I lost my vision on both of my eyes. I had optic neuritis. So both of my eyes were blind completely on the left side.
Interesting.
So it was, because in order to look at you, I would have to turn my look left. I would have to look left to see anyone that was near me. I remember I was reading Harry Potter, and that's what I notified my mother about, that to go to the eye, ear, nose, and throat. And that's when Mount Sinai, they referred me to a neurologist, and they thought I had a stroke. And they failed to check for MS when they gave me a spinal tap. Then I didn't see that doctor anymore. I guess they told him to leave from that hospital because he was never there again. But that same hospital diagnosed me with MS. They gave me another spinal tap. And in 1999, I was 17, the director of Mount Sinai Hospital, Dr. Fred Lublin, diagnosed me with relapsing remitting MS. And that's when it started. Really, he gave me a lot of information about, he gave me pamphlets. You know, I asked questions like, what does it mean? So I went home and I just had even more questions. Like, what's the best place for me to live in? The best state for me to live in? I was told, if I have a heat intolerance, I would have to, I would be more comfortable in Colorado. If I don't have a heat intolerance, or if I can go to, California, San Francisco would be ideal place for both heat and cold. But if I didn't have a heat intolerance, it would be Arizona. I have a heat intolerance, but not as much as, it's a dry heat here. So, but anyway, you're asking about MS.
Yeah. So that's how you ended up where you are, right? In Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your pathway to diagnosis. You know, the average time is about 3 years for people. And for people whom it takes 3 years, it feels like a really long time. But your pathway to your diagnosis was even longer. And my goodness, I'm glad they finally figured out what was going on. But thank you for sharing that, because, you know, so many of us have experiences where doctors dismiss, or they think it's because of something else, right? And I'm glad that eventually you got the diagnosis you needed and you ended up in Arizona where you're thriving. And I agree with you that dry heat, it's dry heat where I live too. And it's a lot easier to manage than humidity.
Yeah, it is. Oh, humidity is, it's horrible. It's really draining. Yeah.
So you were still really young when you were diagnosed. And how did you get from there kind of to where you are now? Like, what are some other maybe signposts in your MS journey that really stand out to you that you would want to share with listeners?
Listen to your body. Listen to your body.
How has that led you in a good direction?
To where I'm at now, because I was really uncomfortable in New York, where I'm from. You know, I had to go somewhere that was more tolerable for my symptoms.
That's good. That's good. And I remember the first time we chatted, you talked about some of the really special things you got to experience for the first time when you moved to Arizona. Do you want to share some of those with us? Like, I remember you said you got to see stars for the first time.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I got to see stars. I got to see the Little Dipper, you know, and I got to see stars. That's like a big deal, because in New York, there's no stars. We have buildings, we have the lights that are contaminating the sky, you know, that are making us unable to see the stars. And when I got here, it's just, I got to see stars. And I was living in a farm for half a year. I got to live with goats and ducks and geese. And that's very, wow. It was very different from living in the city where it's just busy and you're just working and you're just trying to survive paying rent. And it's just, again, you don't see nature but Central Park. But thank goodness I lived by Central Park. So that was a plus. I lived on Park Avenue. And so Fifth Avenue was right across the street. And I would just go there and get lost. And because I had MS at 17, I would kind of purposely walk there and get lost on purpose and walk all around the park, like the entire, it's a huge park. Okay. So I remember doing that and climbing rocks, climbing cliffs, and trying to climb a tree, but doing a lot of physical things. I remember running a lot, even though because I knew I had MS when I was diagnosed at 17, but I knew that my legs were getting worse because that was another main symptom when I was 17. My legs were limping and I went to an adolescent clinic and they said, whatever it is, it might go away. And they were right. It did go away, but not fully. And actually it got worse. And now it's like, I knew that my legs were going to be the first to go. I just felt it. So I kept on with that. I was savoring every moment, running the pavements of Central Park every day, you know, and, even though I'm in a chair, I feel more liberated because when I was in the walker, that's the rough part. When you're on a rollator, I stand up to those that are on rollators because I remember that. That was the roughest part of MS. It's not the invisibility. It's the fact that you're in a rollator and you're visible and you're still not visible for, you're still not proving your disability with, in terms of health insurance wise, they have to see how long you're going to be in a wheelchair. They want to make sure you basically deserve a wheelchair, you know? And like right now I'm going through an issue. I have my chair for 6 years and they're giving me a hard time at getting me a wheelchair. And not only has my insurance changed from New York where I got it to here in Arizona, it's by law I'm supposed to have a new wheelchair anyway. Especially if it's prescribed by my doctor. I don't understand why this isn't happening. And I need a chair. It's my mobility. It's if I'm not with my rollator at home, I'm done. I cannot walk with a rollator outside because I can die. Honestly, I could just in the desert. And I had no phone.
Right, if you got stuck.
If I got stuck in my rollator, I could get really hurt. And I don't want to get hurt in a rollator outside. It's impossible. I could hardly walk in a house. I'm just using this because I don't want to stop walking. I still have my legs. I don't want to stop walking. Until I can't walk anymore, I'll use my chair. Exclusively. But I still, and my doctors look at me like Dr. Valdivia from Center for Neuroscience, he looks at me like I'm insane when I told him that, yeah, I walk very, very slowly, but I walk. His eyes are like aghast. His eyes are wide and he's like, I'm like, yeah, I know it's dangerous. I was like, but I live dangerously. And I told him that.
And well, it's a tribute to your character, right? You don't want it. I have really just met you, but already I know, like, you're tenacious. You're not gonna give up. You're not gonna
Not
give
at
in
all.
to the fight.
Never. I mean, if I'm dragging my feet, that's an issue. I'm not dragging my feet. My feet are still, they're still lifting, and I still have foot drop on both of them, but I'm not like, it's not dead yet. Or maybe it won't ever reach that point, because I'm still doing what I'm supposed to do with my body. I'm still being active. I'm still swimming. I'm still, you know what I mean? And I'm still trying. I'm still taking my therapy, my treatments, and it's really in your mind, as well, your whole outlook in life. If
Absolutely. I do. I'm so glad you mentioned that because, I think for a long time in my journey, I didn't realize just how critical that mindset piece is. But I also want to mention, since you brought it up, there are some, if someone listening right now can relate with your story about kind of being in between in terms of mobility. There are a couple newer things out there that can help, and I'll send this to you, and I'll also try to remember to put it in our episode. But there's a newer device that's fully covered by insurance by a company called Jogo Health, and it's supposed to train your brain to kind of reteach that nerve pathway how to work. And for instance, I have a friend who was experiencing drop foot, and she used this device with the help of a therapist. They have someone program it for you personally. And then she did, I think, 10 or 12 sessions, and it made a huge difference for her. And so if we can catch these things before we lose the ability completely, like, we can have a more positive outlook. So I will send you that jogohealth.com device. And then also, if you're struggling to get the equipment that you need, you've probably already reached out to the MS Society, I would think. But there's also the MSAA, MS Association of America, that does a lot of that kind of assistance for people in our community. I've had a lot of people get things like their bathrooms remodeled so that they were ADA and they got the cost of that covered. I've had people get ramps before. And so there are a lot of resources. So if anyone's listening today and thinking, gosh, I need those things too, or I need help, feel free to reach out and I can share those resources with you and hopefully help people get what they need, because there are groups out there that are trying, but sometimes we don't hear about them. So would you try something like Jogo Health if you thought
Yes,
you might? Yeah. So I'll send
absolutely.
you. And again, it's 100% covered by insurance, even if you're
Amazing.
on Medicare or Medicaid. Like, it works.
Yeah,
So
because I'm just on Medicare. Thank you.
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about how you got from, where you were to now being a published author. You have this new book called Allergy.
Allergy menus, recipes, and techniques is what it's
Yes.
called.
Tell us a little bit about your journey to this point, being a published author and being so knowledgeable about the subject of allergies.
Well, I was working at a food production company in New York City, and I ended up becoming their allergy chef and kitchen auditor. And while I became their allergy chef, and I revised the entire system because what they gave me was complete disarray, made no sense at all. So I was just like, all right, so I'm gonna fix this. And I did. And it's in the book. Everything that I've done for the allergy team is in that book. So the allergy from Monday to Friday, it's really towards it was t the book is aided towards children, grades from elementary to high school. Okay, and the meals were they followed the guidelines for in portions. I did this, I did seasonal because it's just, it makes sense. And it's cheaper. It's fresher. It's so much stuff. Anyway, it's in season. You grow it. You can even grow it, you know, so farm to fork. So, and we got our things locally. And so we did the menu. I did the menu, the menus, and that's all in there as well. And I did the techniques that I developed for the allergy kids, are in that book as well. The techniques, the recipes and the menus are all there. What I did was oversee also, in total, I oversaw 30,000 meals a day is what I did. Cause I wasn't just allergy meals. It was also regular meals, but I took they were special allergy children. The allergy babies, I used to call them the allergy babies, hold a special place in my heart. They're different because they can't eat what everybody else eats, and they have to get their food from their home because no one knows how to cater for them. And that's making them, you know, they're like, okay, so, you know, where's my food? You know, how come I have to get it, you know, from, you know, what if I can't afford that, you know? So the public school system needs to get with that. And so that's what I did for the children that were in charter schools in New York. That's whom I oversaw. And now it's grown. That business has grown to like Pennsylvania, Massachusetts. So that menu is still there. The recipes and techniques are still there.
Beautiful.
But yeah, you so know, what I did was, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm so impressed with just the way you've been able to make food inclusive, right? For these kids who otherwise, as you were saying, had to ask for special food or bring it from home, because mm-hmm. allergies now are way more prevalent than they used to be. Right. So can you tell us, before we get much further, what are some of the main allergies that you accounted for in your book?
It would be vegetarians. It would be vegetarian. I would have vegetarians are very, it's not that it's difficult, but it's more of a percentage of people that have to be vegetarian. And for example, when you have a guest over and you're in a party, or you have several guests coming over in the party, so you have a couple of people that are vegetarian. You know, you have friends that are vegetarian, they can't have meat. What do? And in that book, it tells you the technique on how to simply just adapt to that menu and make it the same thing you're going to create for everyone else, but vegetarian. And it's going to be like a light bulb when after they read it, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, is it just that? They're like, yeah. And you can adapt with all the other allergies doing the same thing. And it's really just that.
And some of those other allergies then would be like nuts, I'm assuming soy, yes, shellfish.
Yes. Yes.
Dairy is a big one for
dairy,
us.
Dairy. Yes, it's in there. Okay. On the cover of my book, you'll see all the allergies that are there, included in my book. That's what I did. Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so you are really an expert when it comes to different diets, different, you know, ways of eating. I'm curious if you would share kind of historically how you've eaten and then kind of how you're choosing to eat now as someone living with MS.
When I was first diagnosed, I was upset with the hospital that misdiagnosed me and then diagnosed me with MS, that I stopped seeing them. And I decided to take matter into my own hands, and became a vegetarian vegan. I was mostly, and I say vegetarian vegan, is because I would be mostly vegan, and then once a week I would be vegetarian. So what happened was I introduced myself to that diet. I lost a lot of weight. I only ate whole foods, by the way. I mean, you can be vegan and vegetarian and have bread. I didn't have that. I had no rice. I had mainly just vegetables and tofu and beans and nuts, a lot of nuts. Oh my goodness. An array of walnuts and pecans. It's delicious.
And so good for us, right? So good for most of us, right? Unless we have.
Yes.
Right.
So I enjoyed that. And I did that for about 6 years. And I wouldn't say I was symptom free because I didn't have any kind of symptoms for those 6 years. That was great. And then I was like, okay. So I went back to Mount Sinai. I told them, look what I did. You know, so I did get a symptom, which is why I went to the hospital. And I said, well, you know, I lasted for 6 years symptom free with my diet. I don't know what happened, but let's get this handled because I've been doing so well. So I got introduced to, there was three options back then, all injections. I chose Copaxone. It's a subcutaneous injection, which means it was under the skin. I did that for about 2 to 3 years. And then I just kept having attacks anyway. You know, I took it for about a year and a half to two. I kept having attacks anyway. My MS is aggressive, at least back then. Now it's pretty sedentary because I have secondary progressive now. But before, it was relapsing, remitting, and that was rough. It's one of the most rough because you don't know what's going to happen. It's just so spontaneous, you know?
Yeah. I do. That's where I'm at right now. Yes. Every day is a new adventure, right?
It's scary.
Yeah, it can
be. It's like, oh my God, you know, I'm doing so well. All of a sudden, there you go, you know? And that's relapsing, remitting. I have secondary progressive. It's chill. It's like all it is it's gradually increasing the symptoms or a symptom, you know, it depends on your body and it just gets worse. Whatever the symptom may be gets gradually worse. That's it. But it's not like a new symptom because basically you kind of had all the symptoms by then, especially if like, for me, that graduated to secondary progressive. There are some that were diagnosed secondary progressive. Mine was a graduation to secondary progressive. There's different ways to get there, but it's just relapsing, remitting is really sucks because it's just the spontaneity of it.
Well, I don't know that any of them are great.
No, it's not great, but it's just the fact that it's spontaneous makes it even more obnoxious. Ugh.
Well, you have a wonderful way of dealing with that. And I hope that is true for most folks experiencing the secondary progressive. That's not the thing with MS. We all experience it so uniquely, right? It's like we can't really compare. But it does sound like you are largely in a pretty good place in terms of your MS, and it's not stopping you from living a great life. You just got back from a cruise where it looked like you had a tremendous time. You're now a published author. I mean, you know, you're not letting, at least from my perspective, it doesn't seem like you're letting MS stop you from living a great life.
It wouldn't. It would never stop me from living a good life. It's just it's a diagnosis. It's not a sentence.
Love that. Love that. Can you tell us a little bit? We were talking about diets and how you had tried a lot of different things. And
yeah.
I would love for you to share kind of how you're eating now, because it does seem to keep you working for you.
Yes, I am following a registered dietitian's diet. He gave me my own special diet. What I'm doing is I'm doing protein. I'm doing protein 100 grams a day. 120 ounces of water is my choice. 80 ounces of water is how it should be and more, the guidelines, but drink as much water as you can. I drink a lot. I think you should always have a bottle of water, a thermal with you, just to continue staying hydrated. It's just good for you, especially if you have MS. I have a lot of protein, and I have protein. I have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I try not to snack. I'm trying not to snack, but if I do, I'm gonna snack on a boiled egg or a couple of ounces of cheese, you know, mostly boiled. But for veggies, I'll do dark vegetables, dark green vegetables, like Brussels sprouts, kale, spinach, things like that. I'll roast some Brussels sprouts a lot at home. So I do lots of whole foods, and it's organic. I try to go organic as much as I can. Grass-fed beef. If I do beef, if I can do, and I'm not supposed to have that much at all, actually. I'll have it like once a month, and it has, and I'll have like grass-fed beef to go with, you know, a type of vegetable. I have fruit. I'm not limited to having fruit. As long as it's not high starchy, like a banana I have anyway, but I don't do it a lot. I'll do it sparingly, like once every 2 weeks or once a month, for just for indulgence, because bananas are great. But I'll have, yeah, all the other types of fruits.
Yeah, and you
Like,
also mentioned something to me about mindfulness in terms of eating. Tell us a little bit about what that means to you or for you.
you have to know what the outcome is going to be after you consume it. You have to know what it is before you consume it, because you have to be mindful. You have to know that there's an after, there's an action, and then there's a reaction. And then there's an outcome to everything you do. And if you don't pay attention to what you're consuming, you're going to regret it the moment after you've done it already. You're going to feel horrible about yourself. And you don't want to feel horrible about yourself because you have MS. You already feel horrible about yourself.
Exactly,
You
exactly. Love
know,
that.
you
Love
already
that.
feel horrible.
So now, in addition to being just an incredible human, a
Thank you.
published author who is so knowledgeable about various allergens and how to create inclusive meals, you are also an MS ambassador for the MS Society. Tell us
Yes.
about that.
Well, I just had a Zoom meeting with other ambassadors this morning for the Latino community. I'm also, and that was, we learned a lot about diagnosis and things to bring to the doctor's appointments and just getting ready for long-term and illness, and just understanding how to take control over your illness. And I took pictures of it. I'll share it to you. And I am going to be in an article with other MS ambassadors. I'm going to be in the National MS Society's magazine. And they're going to include my book, because that's what I've been up to.
Great. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's so exciting. And you know, I have this personal belief, just given all of the people with MS that I've been blessed to meet over the last almost 10 years now. And
Yeah.
it seems like people who start doing advocacy work and start doing things to kind of give back to the community, who have a real sense of purpose, tend to actually weather the storms of MS maybe a little better than people who have lost their sense of purpose, or don't really, you know, spend a lot of time doing advocacy for themselves or others. How do you see this role as becoming an MS ambassador as something that can help you and others?
I help right now. I've been helping my cousin who was just diagnosed with MS 3 years ago. She got her award letter and she has so much on her plate and she doesn't know where to start. And I'm giving her a lot of guidance and she's scared about taking medications, you know, and she's very apprehensive of medications and I don't blame her. You know, she's healthy. You know, she eats organic. She's taking her treatment for MS after kicking and screaming, but she's taking her medication now. And I'm proud of her for that. I'm in a lot of MS groups as well. And I do a lot of advocacy there as well. I share a lot of information to those that are lost because that's what I can do for now, especially since I was doing my book. But now that I'm done with my book, I want to go to events and festivals and speak on behalf of MS people and just make more awareness of our disease and see if they can give donations. You know, that's what I want to do now that I'm done with my book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for doing that on behalf of all of us in this community. Carmen, I just want to thank you again for being here today, for being so open and sharing so much of your story. Listeners, check out this book. It's available now on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. This is a beautiful way that we can support our fellow MS community member, Carmen, and also learn some important things about how to meet our own dietary needs and the dietary needs of others in our lives. So thank you for doing this important work. When I asked you how people could connect with you, you said Facebook was okay?
Yes, Facebook is fine. They can absolutely contact me there. I would absolutely, if they have any questions, if they need help, you know, I'm there.
Beautiful. Is there anything else you want to say to people before we go?
Don't give up. There's a cure coming.
There is. And there's so much we can do for ourselves in the meantime, right? All of the things you talked about, what you do for yourself to support your health, what you do to support your dietary needs, and what you're doing to support our whole community. So I agree. Let's not give up. We are in this together. Together we are stronger.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, I hope you'll come back and visit us again another time, maybe when you have another book published or you have something else, another accomplishment to share with us. But again, thank you so much for being here and for sharing yourself with us.
Thank you so much for having me. You have a blessed day. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed meeting Carmen and learning about her and her new book. If you'd like to connect with Carmen Lucia, she welcomes connection on Facebook. You can find her book, Allergy, Menus, Recipes, and Techniques, online through Amazon and Barnes & Nobles. My hope today is that we all, one, understand just how important it is to have a deep understanding of our own food allergies and sensitivities, and how knowing this information is key for healing and living well with MS. Two, that we consider sharing Carmen's book with organizations and facilities in our networks so that they can provide high-quality, safe meals for everyone. And three, that we remember that even though living with MS can limit us in some ways, we can continue to make a difference in the world like Carmen is doing by finding our unique value add to the world. To continue our conversation, you are welcome to attend our Misunderstood Flock meetings via Zoom the first Saturday of each month. If you're not yet a Flock member but would like to be, please join us. We are all people living with MS from around the world that meet via Zoom monthly to support each other and continue our learning on the episode topics. We also support each other through hardships and celebrate our successes together. You can learn more and join us by visiting our Patreon page. As always, I encourage all listeners to reach out with MS-related questions, comments, future podcast topics or guest ideas via email. And lastly, remember, as we travel through life with MS, we're certain to hit some turbulence. We'll get through it, especially if we're flying together, supporting one another, and honking our encouragement. As always, thank you for listening, and until next time, be well.